Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn. And for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. First, I want to thank all of you who have already pledged during this pledge drive, which is ongoing. And I want to thank you for supporting our public affairs programming. We will have a little break in the middle of this program, and I'll tell you about a couple of things that you can do. We would love to have you continue to be members and of this family, and also new members. We would love to have you. And today we have an incredible show. What would you do if your teenage son kept leaving the light on in his room after you repeatedly told him that the energy that light bulb was using could power something important, like perhaps a microcar or a human electric hybrid? One father who turned his frustration into a once-in-a-lifetime journey with his son arrived in Astoria, Oregon from Yorktown, Virginia 2 weeks ago, just in time to take part in the annual regatta parade here. Pierce and Nash Hoover made national news with their One Bulb Tour, and today we have Pierce Hoover with us by phone from his home in Winter Park, Florida, to tell us about this inspiring and challenging coast-to-coast One Bulb journey. Hi, Pierce.
Good morning, Donna.
Awfully glad to have you here today.
Happy to be here and sharing with you.
And Pierce, before we'll go into the background of this journey, but maybe for listeners who aren't familiar, we should talk about the fact that you left Yorktown, Virginia when, and you arrived in Astoria when, and what did you do?
We left Yorktown June 2nd, arrived in Astoria August 11th, traveling 4,200 miles across the U.S., mostly on back roads, in a little vehicle we call a human electric hybrid. It's a bit more than a bike and a lot less than a car. And it uses the two of us to pedal a little bit to help out with a small motor that uses no more energy in a day than that single light bulb would. And with that, we were able to cross the entire U.S., every mountain we could find, and a lot of flat stuff in between, doing about 60 to 80 miles a day.
How old is Nash, your son?
He just turned 13 in April.
And this all started because you couldn't get Nash to turn off the light in his room.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It was just one of those cases I guess every parent goes through of, you left the light on. And it's not even about the money so much. It's more symbolic, I guess, because one of our early discussions was how much money did I waste? Well, it's a couple of cents a day. You know, to a kid who spends 99 cents on an iTunes download, that didn't really register. So it was more a matter of, you know, this just, it's cheap, but it's not free. In some place, some power plant's churning out some sort of, you know, carbon or whatever to make this happen. So let's be a little bit more aware. And it wasn't just the light bulb, it was everything, you know, the television, this and that. It all takes energy, and let's be smart about how we use it. So I was looking for more of a graphic representation. That led us up to the gym where there's a little bike where you can pedal out 100 watts or 200 watts or whatever on the stationary bike. So that gave him some idea. Well, it really does take work. Well, it takes some effort for me to put out 100 watts. That light bulb's, you know, having to use about what it would take me to pedal. And from there, it just kind of evolved.
And you, did you, and okay, so then you, what gave you the idea that, well, I'm just going to build something or we're going to go, I mean, what in your background made you think that you could create a bike slash car to go across country?
Well, I've been a cyclist my whole life and a bike commuter, you know, to the office. You hardly ever see me come into the office in a car. I'm usually on a bike, and I always loved that. And then a couple of years ago, I had my first exposure to these electric bicycles, which have a small motor and a small battery on there. And it doesn't take the work away from you, but it lets you go a little farther, a little faster. Or maybe if you're on the way to work in your good suit, you don't want to get all sweaty, so you use the motor a little bit more. So I was kind of enamored at this idea of, wow, I can share the workload. Some of it's me, some of it's this little motor. And I'd had that in the back of my mind for a while, plus the idea of doing some sort of a summer-long trip that would be memorable for him. And it came together with this idea of, well, electric assist with a limited 100-watt span. Let's see what we can do. And I started researching, is it possible, and decided, yes, it is actually on that amount of energy. Then it's just a matter of finding a platform that would do it. And rather than a bicycle, we'd settled on a little four-wheeled vehicle for a couple of reasons. Number one, it had more of the appearance of a car, so it had more impact. So people wouldn't say, well, you're just pedaling a bike across the country. It also allowed us to sit side by side, sharing the view, sharing conversation, and it allowed us to put on a windshield and a little roof, which we learned later was invaluable when we got into the hot parts of Kansas.
And the sides are open. It looks like a little bit like a golf cart, would you say?
Yeah, it's almost like a stripped down golf cart with, you know, with pedals and no place for the clubs, instead of a little cargo box where we put our camping gear. So that might be a good analogy. It's kind of an ultralight golf cart.
And you built this yourself, Pierce?
I assembled it. The frame actually came from a company in Montana that builds all kinds of unusual 2-3 and even this four-wheeled vehicle. So we started with one of their recumbent bike frames, with two of them tagged together, what they call a microcar. Then we found a company actually in Portland that builds these electric assist motors called EcoSpeed, and we added that. And then from there, a couple of friends who are in boat building and in different types of fabrication worked with me to create the roof and the windshield and the cargo box and tag it all together. So we spent last spring kind of pulling all the elements together and seeing what worked and what parts we needed and how it geared up and what range we could get and what speed and all that kind of thing.
Was Nash excited about this when you said, okay, you didn't turn the light off in your room, and so guess what? We are going to bicycle across America, bicycle and kind of have this electric motor from EcoSpeed. We're going to cross country for, you know, that's what we're doing this summer, on, you know, essentially a 100-watt light bulb power output. We're going to do that. What did Nash say?
He wasn't ecstatic at first. He was, you know, a little bit concerned about spending the summer away from his friends. On the other hand, he's pretty game for adventure, so he just kind of said, okay, I'll go along with it. I don't think he had any idea of the magnitude at the time, but in some ways neither did I. But once we got going, he fell right into pace with it.
So you built this what you now call a human electric hybrid vehicle, which has two seats and pedals, so you can both be sitting down and pedaling, and then you have the motor to assist if you're going up over a mountain. And you actually had also a stereo, so you could listen to music.
Yeah, we were actually a little bit better equipped than the average cycle tourist or someone. We had a little sound system on it, and we carried a laptop, and we're, you know, kind of wired in the whole way. And, of course, we started out with way too much baggage and mailed a lot of things home the first couple of weeks, especially when we got to the first big set of hills. We realized we needed to be a bit lighter. But that was part of the process, too, is kind of an elimination, kind of a letting go. There was so many things that we thought were essential that ended up not being essential.
Well, do you have any examples of that? Because I know you said that when it rained, you got wet.
Yeah, you know, initially you'd had all kinds of fancy rain gear and this and that and extra sets of clothes, and slowly you start paring that down, and do you really need this, and do you really need an electric toothbrush, and all kind of things that you take for granted at home that you just kind of learn to live without or simplify, and it was just there was a lot of little items like that, and it's just kind of an ongoing process. I think everyone who backpacks or travels kind of goes through that. It's kind of a refinement.
And when you decided that you were leaving from Yorktown, Virginia, because you were going to follow the Trans-American Bicycle Trail, is that correct?
Yes, there's actually, you know, I mean, taking something like this across country is not a matter of getting on the interstate, because we're talking about speeds of maybe 15 to 20 miles an hour when you're, you know, cruising on the flatland, to as little as 6 or 7 miles an hour when you're climbing a mountain. So obviously not something you want to take on the freeways, nor are you allowed. So you're sticking to secondary roads, back roads. It seemed the safest way to do that was to follow this route that they've created for bicyclists that links together a lot of back roads and scenic byways right across the middle of the country. So it's done for safety and for scenery, because you're going through some of the most scenic and wild parts of the country.
And how did you finance this, Pierce? I mean, you obviously had to create the car, but then it cost you money to do this. I mean, how did that work? You had sponsors?
There was some element of sponsorship. Mostly it was, you know, a matter of dipping into the savings account. And as I told Nash, spending is inheritance, but in a good way. The trip was actually promoted and picked up by Popular Science magazine, which is part of the publishing group that I worked for. And Popular Science then partnered with GE to provide sponsorship opportunities and publicity and so forth, and some of the expenses for the tour. So they helped out. And then, in fact, I was blogging for Popular Science magazine throughout the summer. And there was a program with GE to give away some energy-efficient light bulbs or new LED bulbs that, by my calculation, every bulb you switch out to that new one saves about a barrel of oil over its lifespan. So there was an element of that along the way that we were able to add, of, you know, kind of, you know, simple conservation measures that you can do. And that was thanks to Popular Science and GE. And then there was actually some pretty enthusiastic support from the far end, from your end in Astoria, early on in the trip, there was a story in the Oregonian about our plans, you know, that came out of the partnership with EcoSpeed in Portland. And the owner of the Cannery Pier Hotel, I got a phone call out of the blue introducing himself and saying he was a big enthusiast in terms of electric vehicles and things like this, and he wanted to invite us to Astoria. He said, if you make it to the end of the trip, I'll put you up in the hotel and we'll wine you, dine you a little bit and maybe put you in the parade, which it turns out we did make it in time for.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and actually talking about how, so that was your Astoria connection, and how did you know how many miles you could do every day?
Well, we had some idea because we spent most of our Saturdays all spring taking the vehicle out and knocking off some miles and seeing what worked. And when something broke, we'd push it back in and fix it and figure out how to strengthen it or replace it. So we had a reasonable idea, but I also just kind of looked at the route and said, well, what's realistic? I knew that I could keep pace with the average bicyclist, and most heavily loaded touring cyclists do anywhere from 40 to 70 miles a day. So we kind of planned on an average of 60 miles a day. Early on, we found out we could actually do a bit more. We could do 80 to 90 miles a day, barring breakdowns, which kind of made up for the breakdowns, of which there were quite a few along the way. But towards the end, we realized that it wasn't about making the miles. We were glad we made more miles through the middle part of the trip because we ended up slowing down and really enjoying things more the farther we went.
When you say breakdowns, what kinds of things went wrong with the vehicle?
Well, you've got basically something that you started with a bicycle and made it a lot more complex and a lot heavier and added a lot of extra elements. So there's a lot of parts that were kind of untested in what we were doing. I know the EcoSpeed people said we pushed their product harder than it had ever been pushed before. So there's always something that's going to snap, whether it's a chain or a crank or a spoke. So it was just a variety of things, and it would seem like it would happen at, of course, the least opportune times on the side of a roadway at dusk when it was raining. So there was a bit of a, you know, a learning curve there, and a bit of a, you know, the biggest learning curve might be dealing with the frustrations and just taking it all in stride. So it seemed like, especially the first month or so, there was a lot of, you know, just little snafus that you'd overcome. And then, of course, the weather patterns. We had an interesting summer. In the east, there was some heat waves early on, then a wave of thunderstorms with tornadoes that we'd sometimes have to duck in and wait out for a day or two. And then the Midwest was under kind of this 100-plus heat wave all summer.
And there you were bicycling in this little vehicle you had created. And so you were hot, you were rained on, and yet it was an amazing adventure for both of you.
Well, yeah, again, I said that it's nothing that a lot of cyclists don't do every year, and they get rained on more, and they don't even have a roof over them. But, again, it allowed me to do it with a 13-year-old, and it wasn't about toughing it out, because even with all that sounds so challenging, it really wasn't that bad. It was enjoyable.
And people must have, did they look at you and wave to you? You had banners, you had a one bulb tour on the vehicle, and did they wonder, did people say, who are you, what are you doing, what is this?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, the average, what saved us a lot was, of course, everyone's passing us on the two lanes. There was the curiosity factor, so a lot of them would slow down, have a look at it. A lot of people took pictures, and every so often we had a Facebook page, and we'd get a message, saw you on the road today, you know, and they'd go to check in with us, say hi. Very few negative comments. You know, every so often there'd be somebody who'd say you don't belong on the roads or something like that, but not nearly as much of that as I expected, which was surprising because in some ways we were an impediment to traffic in the heavier traffic areas, but actually a lot of positive response too when we'd describe what we were in and what we were doing. The vehicle charged up with just a little wall plug where you plug in a lamp, so we could pull into a restaurant or a gas station or what have you, or having a break, and say, do you mind if we plug into your wall outlet for a few minutes? It'll take about 2 cents worth of electric to charge this thing up. They said, oh, I don't care about the 2 cents, the shop owner would usually say. How far can you go on that 2 cents? I'd say 40 or 50 miles. And at that point, they're ready to, you know, place an order for one themselves.
Absolutely, because I can see people doing this in their neighborhoods and in small towns, not certainly on an urban, freeways and that kind of. But really, this is a wave of the future, and we've actually reached the midway point in the program. For those of you listening, you are listening to Talk of Our Towns, and we're at www.coastradio.org. Pierce, what would you have done differently about this journey now that you're home? You've had a chance to reflect on this. What were some of the lessons learned, and what are you going to be up to in the future?
Well, there were definitely lessons learned. The first was that we were probably a little bit too slow and a little bit underpowered for some of the roads we were on. Something like this, you know, if there ever was another one I'm contemplating, it would have to be a bit faster, a bit more agile, to be really safe as a viable part of the daily roadway. But that really wasn't the intention. I think, you know, we took this across country almost as a demonstration, or some might say a stunt. But, you know, in my mind, that's really not the use of this type of vehicle. It would be more of what we were doing the last week in Portland. You know, Portland, of course, being a very bike-centric, bike-friendly town. Really what I envisioned was this is kind of like the dinosaur precursor to a whole new class of vehicle that is like these little EVs you start to see running around, the neighborhood electric vehicles, and this is maybe even a step below because it allows you to participate. So you're not just sitting there statically. You're getting to pedal a little bit if you want to. But, again, more than a bike, so you've got more range than a bike, more speed than a bike, more weather protection. So people, you know, who might not be inclined to go right to a bicycle and embrace that kind of almost hardcore lifestyle might say, well, you know, this is a viable option. I'm not going to give up my car when I'm going from, you know, here to Seattle or whatever. But if I'm running down to the store for milk or I'm going over here to drop this off, you know, I take this little vehicle around town, all of a sudden, you know, the miles add up, 3 miles here, 5 miles there, and this is what we found at home. All of a sudden, you've done 40 or 50 miles over the course of a week. And that's 2 or 3 gallons of gas you haven't put into the big car. So I really see an opportunity for this kind of vehicle to enter the mix in, you know, urban environments where there is the opportunity for more bike-friendly or small vehicle-friendly traffic.
And it really looks like it's a lot of fun. I mean, obviously we have sedentary lifestyles today more than ever when we're using all of our technology. So this would be a great way to not only go out and do your shopping and do what you need to do in, you know, in an area which is safe for this vehicle. But you also get some exercise too. So, and it's fun.
Yeah, you know, everyone's into this multitasking thing. Well, here's your chance to multitask meaningfully. I said, you know, the example I always say is, why do we all drive our SUVs to the gym to work out on a treadmill? I mean, that's kind of counterproductive. So here's your chance to get a little bit of the exercise in on a regular basis while you're going about your daily chores. And yet it is enjoyable. It's not, arduous. So I absolutely see that as, you know, a chance to just put a little activity back into your day so you're not just sitting in that car stuck in traffic. Because somehow 15 to 20 miles an hour when you're working with it and going along with the open road in the air feels a lot more fun and a lot faster than creeping along at 15 miles an hour in your big pickup or whatever.
Oh, that's so true. And Terry Wilson, our engineer, has a question. Did you ever have to get out and push it up a hill?
There were a couple of times in the east when we just, especially at high altitude, when it could have made it up the hill, but it was just a little easier to push, and there's a couple of really steep sections. And then there was one point that we're kind of proud of, because some of the cyclists said, well, the motor's working, you know, you guys aren't really doing much pedaling yourself, which, some truth to that, but we certainly got our workout. But in central Oregon, we had a problem with a bearing on the Sisters, you know, bend side of the mountain, and wanted to get to Eugene to have it fixed, and it was going to be 3 days for the part to be delivered. So I told Nash, I said, we're just going to pedal this thing and push it over McKenzie Pass, which we did. It took us all day to climb over the Cascades, but there were some sections there where without the motor's help, you know, we kind of pushed it up the real steep sections. And, of course, we had a wonderful 20-mile coast down the other side into the Willamette Valley. But in general, no, it's, you know, with an electric motor, you've got a lot of torque. And if you're willing to gear it down low enough and just go slow enough, it'll pretty much climb anything.
And what do you think the big takeaway for Nash was on this? I mean, I know he was blogging, and he's very articulate, by the way. And for those of you listening, if you want to know more about the One Bulb Tour, you can go to onebulbtour.com, and there are blogs from the journey. You all really kept in touch with people and with popular science, and I know EcoSpeed was involved the whole way. What do you think Nash really feels about the experience now? What would he say to his friends?
Well, the first thing he told me is, you know, I'd do this again with you, which says a lot. So, you know, even though it was a few moments during the trip when we, you know, had our differences, but he said, yeah, I'd do something like this again. He definitely got to see the U.S. in a way that you don't see from just, you know, cruising the interstate, meeting a lot of people, a lot of small towns, a lot of varied experiences, certainly the geography. You understand the way this country unfolds, like never before. He said he's picked up an interest in journalism and also in cycling. He went down to the local bike store the other day And they said, well, we're too young to hire you, but you can come hang around and sweep the floors kind of like an apprentice if you want to. So he's going to start hanging out at the bike shop learning bike mechanics and things like that. And he said he's going to work more on his photography and his writing. So I think it's kind of, you know, giving him a little direction in those areas. We'll see what comes of that.
Well, it's really, that's very inspirational, Pierce, really. I mean, good on you for what you did. And when you left on this trip, you took sleeping bags and you camped along the way, and then you also stayed in, I mean, how did that work about your sleeping arrangements?
A variety. You know, as anyone who's done this kind of thing knows, you know, you spend a couple of nights on the ground and you're ready for a shower. So we kind of mixed it up, a night or two camping here. In the east, there's actually a number of hostels and even firehouses that will put you up as a traveling cyclist, so we would take advantage of those. Every so often, we'd meet someone who would invite us home for the evening, and then we'd temper that with, you know, the hotel stays. So after a couple of nights of roughing it, we'd check into a nice hotel where we'd have, you know, all the comforts of home and whatnot, and that went a long way towards, you know, keeping morale up.
Pierce, we just have a few minutes left, and I would love to know what you would like our listening audience to do or to know about what you've done, this incredible experience that you've done for you and for your son, and really inspiring other people along the way.
Well, the first and most simplest is what I was trying to instill in him, that, you know, just a simple awareness of something as simple as flipping off a light bulb or turning off something when not needed does make a difference. You turn off a light bulb for 1 hour, that gave me enough electricity to go 3 miles down the road. So it does add up. So a simple awareness like that, and then maybe just a little more acceptance and, you know, open-mindedness towards alternative vehicles. I think in the future we not necessarily need our big vehicles for everything. You know, maybe there's some alternatives out there that are viable and comfortable and fun. And then just in the idea of, I'd say, you know, if you have the opportunity, do more things with your kids like that while you have the chance, because, you know, this was 3 months that is probably the last time in our lives we'll ever spend that much time together, and it was pretty wonderful.
There were some highlights, I'm sure. I know when you were here in Astoria, Lord Astor was here from England, and you gave Lord Astor's son a ride. Nash gave him a ride in the, what do you call it? You call it just the, do you have a name for it? Did you name this vehicle?
We call it the 100-watt hybrid.
The 100-watt hybrid. So you gave Charles, Lord Astor's son, a ride, and he just thought it was fantastic. They took pictures of it to take back to England, and I think that was marvelous. I loved seeing that happen here, and loved seeing it plugged into just a little outlet, and the joy that you all felt about having, you know, arrived here after this journey. But along the way, were there some highlights? Were there a particular places or things that stood out for you?
Well, I think, you know, of course, in terms of just the scenery and the topography, the West was inspiring, especially the big mountains. And every time you'd spend all day struggling up a mountain pass and reach the top was always, you know, kind of a nice goal. But really, it was just kind of the subtle change along the way. I mean, I think we both came home with a much greater appreciation for simplicity and simple things, and the idea that, you know, we might just start simplifying our lifestyle in general. We've spent the summer doing more with less and had a great time in it, and some days our total entertainment was laying on the bank of a stream and maybe playing a card game or just watching the trees. And maybe we don't need 200 channels to entertain us all the time, so we're not giving up, you know, we're not going to become, you know, yurt dwelling counterculturist anytime, but it definitely kind of reinforced in our minds, you know, what's important and how we're maybe able to live a little simpler.
That's great, Pierce. I know that someone who's actually inspirational speaker and she travels around the world, and she said that slowing down is the new hurrying up or something like that, which is, it's just this idea that we need to slow down, and you certainly did that. And for those who want to know more about the One Bulb Tour, Pierce, please let people know how they can find out more information about what you've done and about these kinds of vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there. Again, my blog was on Popular Science's website. Popular Science is called Popular Science Eco Tour 2011. My son had his blog at onebulbtour.com, and both of those have some good information. And that would be probably the best place to go to look for it. In terms of the electric vehicles, I think you're just going to see more of that cropping up as time goes on.
Right. And next week, I'm actually having EcoSpeed on the program, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's wonderful to have an Oregon company be involved in this and have you end here in Oregon. Thank you so much, Pierce, for being on the program today. And please give my best to Nash. And we're very grateful that you've really shown us another way to think about how we move around in the world today. Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Take care, Pierce. Look forward to seeing more of your adventures in the future.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Terry Wilson, for being the engineer extraordinaire you always are. And I want to thank local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. With gratitude for all the good things in your life and focus on those good things to expand them. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.